How about this? For a five-a-side team. De Niro, Pesci, DiCaprio, Pacino, Aniston, managed perhaps by Martin Scorsese. You don't know where I'm going with this.
I don't know where you're going. You said Aniston. You have my rapt attention.
Jennifer Aniston.
Of course.
That was the post-Oscars party I managed to crash last week in LA. I was at the Netflix dome. Sneaked in. Well, I was staying in the hotel where it was at, so they couldn't really kick me out. It was great. And they were all there, all these stars sat together. I just thought we'd start with a game of handshake poker.
In the last 2 weeks, well...
Laura Dern.
All I've got is...
Who's there?
That bloke with the twitch who sits behind me at the den. That's not really...
Well, that's all right. That counts.
So did you meet Jen, and what did Jen say?
I definitely think she checked me out.
Of course she did.
Mainly because I was staring at her like a lunatic. But no, not at all. Not at all. But, I spoke to... Courtney Cox, I spoke to, briefly.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Miss Cox, how was she?
She was very pleasant.
She was crackers when we had her on TFI Friday.
Really?
I'm not being right. Yeah, she really was. She was freaked out by it. She said, are they going to be that close? Yep.
Yep.
So how do I get in here? I said, you walk in that door through those people and sit down here. She wasn't ready for that. It wasn't Johnny Carson. Anyway,
we're back in the kitchen. It's a slightly different kitchen because I'm changing my kitchen. Therefore, I'm not being able to cook because I've got no cooker or anything.
Nah.
So apologies to that.
I like
that
the old ground better.
Yeah,
I did. I'm missing the old ground.
It's like going from the old den to the new one.
It is. I'm already nostalgic about sitting over there.
How was your winter?
Well, it was eventful one way and the other. Yeah. I've been following your shows with great interest. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you how my winter was.
Millwall had a good run.
Listen, I'll show you something. And my attendance has been at the den over the last...
Yes, I've seen you actually going to football games.
Has been spotty. Look what I got for Christmas. Can you read that? That'll be a Millwall season ticket then.
Did
my boy said, I'm fed up of all this having to report by proxy. I'm there.
Brilliant.
Rain or shine. And when I say rain or shine, during the last great storm,
rain.
The only game that was still on, Millwall West Brom. Yeah. Oh, they came. They're good. West Brom are good.
Yeah.
But yes, I am there now all the time.
Good. Blimey. Yes. How long was it before that you regularly went?
I mean, I'd go when I fancy maybe twice, three times a season, maybe. But, you know, I put in my work at the coalface for 50-odd years before that, but in exactly the same pattern as my dad. Same happened in my early 50s, and I thought, I don't know. And then you come roaring back like you never left.
Man, good to see. It's always better at games.
Oh, no, it is. Yeah.
I was at a game on Saturday. First, I don't know if you saw match of the day on Saturday, but we did. Well, that's why.
Yeah.
Well, there were two. There was the early kickoff. Southampton, Burnley, and then there was Norwich, Liverpool. So we did this thing where, because we actually pre-recorded Match of the Day, and we did it live from the ground, and it was actually a bit of fun. It was all right. It's different.
Yeah.
Although it was blowing up, it was trying. I nearly got blown away in the post-match.
Our audience listening right now say. Bad conditions, you don't know what bad conditions are. Let me tell you, we'll get games played on the side of the Himalayas.
I've played in bad conditions over the years.
I think I must have asked you this before.
Blackpool was the worst one ever in the FA Cup. It was like one of these storm things, but it was worse. In fact, and it was the only time I'd ever seen... Was it their goalkeeper or our goalkeeper? I can't remember. I don't think it was Neville Southall. I think it was the keeper of Blackpool. It was a cup tie. And he kicked the ball... You know, the old goalkeeping kick.
Yeah.
And it went, the wind caught it and actually blew it behind the stand, behind him. It was unbelievable. It was ridiculous that we played it. And it was actually on the telly, and I miss a header that it looks like is the biggest sitter ever. But the wind blew it the last second.
Is that right?
Honestly. Honestly, Danny. If I'd have missed that.
We'll start the show properly in a second, I promise you. But the we should have beat Fulham.
You say that every week, but
we never started the show. Against Fulham, they're useless, Fulham they are, I'm afraid, as evinced by they getting beat 3-0 by bottom side Barnsley at the weekend. But we should have beaten them. We had a penalty to do it. And I've got to tell you, Wallace took it and... It was the most high, wide and handsome thing you've ever seen. People holding their sides, other people swearing, and it was just ludicrous. It ended up, the away supporters have to be two tiers up. It ended up amongst the Fulham supporters,
really?
Who equally were helpless, we laughed at to throw it back.
Chris Waddle, was it?
It was exactly that, and we were making jokes about it. Anyway, after the game, having a soothing half after the game, 1-1 draw. And we said, but if you're going to miss a penalty, don't do that. What was he thinking?
He probably didn't want to do that.
But the replay came on, Gary, the replay came on. And it hit the bar. From our angle, we had no idea. The poor bloke must be saying, all right, you shouldn't even hit the bar. But it hit the bar so hard, it just went boom.
Yeah.
And it looked like it was all one shot.
Made him look a fool.
Yeah, made him look a fool.
His penalties was pretty damn good. Except that he missed the target completely.
There is that. Yeah. So let's get down to the hard tact of Manchester City. What do we think about all of that? What do we think? Division Two? Sorry.
You can do that. I don't know. It's one of those that they've played such wonderful football over the last few years.
Crooked, apparently. Apparently.
Well, we'll see, won't we? I'm sure that
appears. Apparently, that's what I'm saying at the moment, but as it stands.
It's hard to understand all the FFP. It's really quite complex, a lot of it, isn't it? But
I'd like to say I'd looked at it thoroughly, but all I know is the headlines. And when I said that I think all Premier League teams should have to go down to Division Two at one point, like going in the army. In Israel, you have to go down at one point and fight your way back.
That's an unbelievable idea.
It's a great idea.
It's not a great idea.
It is. You've got 15 years. You can take your pick your time. Man United could do it now and say, well, as we'll get it out of the way.
They might as well do it now while they're not very good. Exactly. Is that what you're saying?
But I've been thinking.
I don't think Liverpool will do it now, will they?
No, they wouldn't do it now.
Not at this precise moment. What they're doing is ridiculous.
Although, it is, of course, it's ridiculous. Since last we met, they've extended it three times.
Won every game since we met.
Threefold.
Every single game.
But the only thing people got to cling to, certainly City fans, United fans, Chelsea fans, is, you won it by like 30 points. The VAR year, the year when City were distracted, they will try and taint Liverpool's championship this year.
Well, fans of opposing teams, that's what they do. And then the fans of their own team will get, then it will all get nasty, and that's how it works.
And that's how the world goes round. But it's like QPR fans who talk about their glory. Oh, with the plastic pitch. Oh, yeah, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And this will be it. Oh, the VAR year before
they plastic
it
pitch
out.
That used to curl up at the edges. Yeah. Honestly, it was surreal.
I'm just going to say, we're joined, we never have guests, but we're joined, my nephew is with us. Yes. It's a strange thing to say of a full-grown man here, is my nephew, Phil.
Full-grown hair, that's for sure.
And I let you go by that, what was your opening story again? Where were you? At the Oscars.
The Netflix party and the Oscars,
And who was there?
San Vicente Bungalows. I've read a few out. Yeah. De Niro, Pesci, DiCaprio, Pacino.
My nephew, Phil.
Yeah.
My nephew, Phil, was also there, by the way, because...
At that party?
Don't let this sullen man confuse... Tell him where you live, where you've just flown in from. Come over here, because this is going to be worth it.
Yeah. You're going to have to come next to the microphone.
Right to the microphone. Sorry to do
it doesn't work otherwise.
Yeah, right in here. Yeah. Where do you live?
LA.
He lives in LA.
LA.
He's only here for a few days.
Yeah, when did you get in?
Saturday morning.
I was in Friday.
And ask him what he does over there for a living.
You do Netflix parties,
no?
Do you?
No.
Good.
Unemployed football coach right now.
Are you?
He's been coaching in America for decades.
Oh, really?
Never mind about the season.
For decades? He only looks about 21.
He's not. He is. He's a football... Yeah? He teaches American kids to play football.
God, damn, that must be hard. Actually, all the kids play it, don't they? It's hugely popular.
Huge.
Yeah, huge, but then it kind of peters out at some point.
And he has done the... Come right in, Phil, while we can't hear you. Only a few minutes of this, because I thought you were going to think I don't want to Dan stumble bum mates.
Yeah.
But he teaches Americans to play football. Doing a pretty good job at it, by the way. He's only been for a few days. I've got to get him to tell a story in a minute, which will make your socks roll up and down your legs. But why was he at the Netflix party? Listen to this, everyone.
You were at the Netflix party?
He goes to all of them.
Were you? You can confirm, then, that those people that I saw were there.
Oh,
you weren't?
My wife was there.
Because his wife, who's my niece, that's why he married him,
is Jennifer Aniston.
Is one of the best known publicists. Is the best known publicist. And the reason he's here is because one of her clients...
Well, it's a small world, you see.
Little fella called Billie Eilish is in town.
Oh, yeah.
And his wife looks after it. And but number one, he's a big fan of this show. So, Billie Eilish.
Well, there you go.
And he's at the Brits tomorrow. So I'll let you go
Fantastic.
On with your Oscar story.
Yeah.
I've got a nephew who wasn't at that party. So there you go.
You always usurp me. Always.
What have you got over there, Gary?
I've got loads. Thanks once again for sending your questions in. Let's start with one from Hamster McKenzie. Hamster McKenzie. I can't be his real name.
Was Richard Gere at that party?
I've heard that one. Yeah, I've heard those rumours. Anyway, we'd best not get ourselves in trouble. Who is the least footballer-looking footballer ever? It's quite a good question.
For me...
I've got one or two in my head.
Do you remember Doug Rugby used to play for Chelsea?
Doug Rugby's a good chap. Doug Rugby I played against so many times.
Did you?
His legs were so bowed, I think I went through them a few times. That just sounds terrible. Actually, that sounds really bad.
Doug Rugby, one of the last of the old brick-built players who used to have to do a three-point turn before he could get after you.
It's like Robert Huth.
Robert Huth.
What about Matthew Letizia, who was an extraordinarily good footballer?
Yeah.
But well, didn't look necessarily...
Do you not really? Matt Letizia?
No, it's harsh. No, I'm being a wonderful player.
I'm willing to accept
Chris
it.
Chris Waddle? Like, you know, the old shoulders.
I'm talking about demeanor and things. Yes.
No, not in the media. I'm talking about in the fact how they, you know, they carry their stature and they carry themselves.
Because
Chris Waddle was always that, like, terrible posture. Like, and he was gangly, but what a footballer.
Yes.
You know,
you're quite right. That thing you're doing there. Yes, he did used to walk around like that. Yes, he did. Now, I'd say I'll go up on the more brick-built ones. And now you look at footballers, especially on them cards from the 70s, and you think... It's not just the hair. You just think, man, alive, they look like today's players' granddads.
Yeah.
And then they're not, you know, they're fairly young. When you look at even the World Cup winning side, Nobby Stiles don't look like a footballer, really, does he?
No, good shout.
He don't. Even
Nobby Stiles.
Dear old Bobby Charlton, his brother Jack did.
Yeah.
But I think modern footballers tend to look like
footballers. Neville Southall. But goalkeeper.
Oh, no, you're right there. It is Neville
especially
Southall.
Especially now.
I know. Yeah. In the terms of, unless anyone can give us photographic evidence otherwise, players who now...
Fatty Folks.
But certainly Reza Ruddock, you could put... He looks like he's hit himself many times over. Reza's as fat as a house these days. Who's the broadcaster now? Old Alan...
Alan Brazil. Yeah, but...
Enormous.
Yeah.
Enormous.
But I'm talking about when they're playing, let's be fair. Of the modern players, have you seen this? The attire worn by the young Everton player, that Tom Davies?
No.
Check it out.
Give me a
stereotypical footballer.
Really?
No, he kind of goes around in dressing gowns and big baggy things and...
Is it the kind of thing that in a less enlightened age we'd have got choyoked about?
I think it's the kind of thing that I've never seen before. But it's the sort of thing you would see in a fashion show that they walk through and you go, why do they put that in? As if anyone would ever wear that. That's the kind of thing.
Oh, I see. Yes. It's a bit, cutting edge.
Yeah, like
what do we know? We're out of touch with all of that.
Individuality.
Did you have a dress code at all your clubs? Was there such a thing?
Yeah, it varied. It was either suit and tie or tracksuit. I think Barcelona were tracksuits. Nowadays, have you seen the Barcelona players nowadays?
No.
They just go in any old rags and bags and halsey.
See, coming back to that City thing, didn't Barcelona get fined like €300 at the beginning of the season? I think they
did. But they're saving up.
they've got the 30 million.
Yeah,
I think.
I know.
Barcelona.
But even that, it's not the fine at all, is it, the City thing? They say fine them 30, 40, 50 million.
No.
If they kick them out 2 years of the Champions League, that's massive.
And this fifth place.
And that's massive.
We speak ahead of the Man United-Chelsea game, which now fascinates people strangely.
Yeah. And I feel for like Pep and the players and even Chicky, who I know and I used to play with. And, you know, these things, if these things have been done and it's proved to be that they broke all the rules, you know, it's the people higher up in the club that are obviously to blame. And ultimately it's the players and the fans that will suffer. Although,
but in a nutshell, Gary, what have they done? I actually don't know what they've done apart from, you know,
that's what I mean.
Caught their fingers in the till.
Fell foul of financial fair play, so they've used ways round the fact of how much they can spend. I'm not.
Oh, right.
But I don't know the actual... I've not actually studied it enough yet.
It's good...
Lawyers will be involved,
Good sport for the rest of us.
You know, but who knows? You might have Sheffield United in the Champions League next season, or Wolves, or... That'd be extraordinary, wouldn't
it? Millwall was in Europe with the year they won in the FA Cup against Man United, of course.
Because
Man United were already there, and we didn't get past the opening fixture against Fenerbahce, nevertheless.
I wonder what Fenerbahce made of the old, the den.
Anyway.
Have you got anything?
Yes, I have. A footballer saved my life, we've got here. A footballer saved my life, and beautifully written by Matt Thomas from Colchester.
Okay.
Back in 1993, I was on holiday in Corfu with several mates. Whilst having a few drinks, we recognised the recently retired Nigel Callaghan, formerly of Watford and Aston Villa. He was DJing in a bar. He was on the lookout, as it turned out, for volunteers to plan a match he had the next day, tourists versus holiday workers, and the four of us said, we'll have some of that. As the match was several miles away, I hired two mopeds with two of us on each. On the way to the match, we stopped to put petrol in the tanks, thankfully having Nigel there to advise us we needed two-stroke petrol. None of us having ridden one of these machines before. The match went ahead, a close loss, the bikes were dropped off, and we regaled our stay-at-home mates with tales of our varying performances. Later that night, however, there came a knock on the door of the apartment.
Good knock, Danny.
Radio train. A giant of a man stood there, as wide as he was tall. "You're coming with me." "Huh? What's your name?" I told him. "You're coming with me." It seems silly now, but I just complied and jumped on the back of his bike. This man took me to a long, thin office on the main strip. As I walked in, I think ominous is the word, I sat on the sofa on the right and three men sat there looking at me, all similarly tall and wide as my chauffeur. There was a desk ahead of me with an older gent either side. I think the Godfather is not far off the image we're looking for. The old gent started telling me, "You've broken the bikes." "What? You broke the bikes?" "No, we didn't break any bikes." "Yes, you did." And he began ranting at me, asking how it was that I broke the bike. Why are they so damaged? Why had I put the wrong petrol in? It immediately hit me. My mate riding the other bike had stopped off on the way back to add a little more petrol. The idiot had clearly not put the right stuff in, and thinking on my feet, I vehemently denied this could have happened because, well, Nigel Callahan, you know the DJ? He was putting in two-stroke for us. He was there, Nigel. The man looked at me. Nigel Callaghan, yes, he... "You know Nigel?" "Yes, I did." It was all right. Of course, we went back and Nigel immediately supported the fact he could not have put wrong fuel in those engines. However, we didn't mention we'd stopped on the way back and topped them up with the wrong stuff. "Nigel's good. You're okay with Nigel," he said, and they left us. The week after I returned there was a spate of news stories about in the UK press about how some tourists on the Greek island had been threatened after taking out mopeds. If Nigel listens to this podcast, of course he does, I'd just like to thank him for supporting our story. I wasn't entirely honest, but things could have got messy without him.
Well, how about that? That's very good. I'm not sure he saved his life.
I don't know. You're sitting there with Joey Pesci and everyone.
Wrong petrol in.
Yeah, Joey. As Joey Pesci said to you at that party, "You're laughing at me. What, I amuse you?
He never said anything to me."
He's older in real life, I understand, than he's in The Irishman. Have you seen The Irishman?
Apparently they manufacture them to look younger.
It works. It works, but they still walk like Chris Waddle. Yeah. So it doesn't really work. They don't entirely carry it off. Yeah. Something else, Gary?
Yes. Right, here you go. During one of the last stadium tours, this is from Alex Welding, who says, during one of the last stadium tours at Highbury, my brother, then 7, got stuck in one of the toilet cubicles in the changing rooms and had to be let out by security. Has this ever happened to a player or even better, a manager?
Oh dear, what can the matter be, as they used to say?
I've seen some terrible things that some players that it's a toilet in the dressing room at Leicester, and one or two players that remain nameless, you just wouldn't shut the door.
Really?
What's that about?
I mentioned.
And he did worse things, but I
mentioned Razor Ruddock earlier, and Gazza never used to do that. He'd come round my ass.
Yeah, well.
And
it didn't matter whether Gazza stood in a toilet or not. He just, because he didn't bother with the toilets.
No,
he's doing it in the bath.
You'll remember. I think it was Steve Harrison who was in charge of Millwall for a while.
He had a
disgraceful story involving Ordeur.
Yes.
But you look
that
up.
I walked
on the
out
internet,
of
kids.
That. I walked out of one of those during he was in his time in England.
You didn't.
Yes, I'm not going any further than that. Yep.
I do apologise. We never, a discreet veil.
So,
but you joined the dots.
I'm talking about the being locked in the loo. I wasn't quite locked in the loo, but on Saturday at Norwich, after the game, after we'd finished, and it went on because we were pre-recording Match of the Day, so there were a couple of other games, so it took a little bit of a while. So everyone had gone from the ground by the time we left, and on the way out, I thought, it's a long drive, hello, and I'll nip to the loo. So I nipped to the loo, fading light, a couple of lights on. But got it, trying to find one, got in the loo. Suddenly, all the lights in the stadium went completely out. It was like, I'd already started. So as you've started, you have to finish. So, and then it's so black. I can't
see anything. Yeah.
And I started to go, did the lights go out or have the doors just glam shut or something? Because I tried a couple of other loos on the way out and they were locked. And I suddenly thought, oh my God, what do I do if I can't If I can't. So I'm starting to vomit out. And then I suddenly thought, you idiot, put your torch on your phone. Because we've all got a torch.
I was hoping you wouldn't have it with you.
I know. I know. It would have been a better story if I hadn't. But I did, just for a few seconds, I thought, oh.
I did almost exactly that last week.
Well, you wouldn't have been saved by the phone.
I wouldn't have. And I went into a toilet and we'll get over these toilet stories in a minute. And, and it was one of those where I just in my head, because it was in a modern building, you know when you walk in and the lights come on? To save energy, they're off.
I thought that's what it was. Well, I did that. Come back on, but
I walked
didn't.
Into the centre of it. The door closed behind me. It wasn't one of those. No. The lights weren't just... And I could not see a thing. No. I know where, didn't know what the geography of the room was, and I was fumbling.
Your fly is generally in the same place, though.
I was having to put my hands out.
It's
and
where
say,
you pee.
I'd already started.
Imagine walking in and then trying to... Well, anyway.
Well, within reason, if I might dare say this to our audience, within reason, any great... stories you have, and outside the usual of conveniences in a football stadium, and the hilarious tales that ensue from that. We would love to hear from that.
We should get some good ones.
But just
that,
keep it, you know, keep it decent.
I've got another one here from Tommy O'Gorman. Did you, in a professional team, ever not play a pass to or involve another player in a move because he was so poor that it essentially felt like giving the ball back to the opposition? Harshly, he says, e.g. Tommy English when you were at Leicester. Tommy was all right. Tommy's a decent player. love the podcast, gents. Well, thank you for that, Tommy. But, yeah, of course.
Yeah, really.
Well, there are players you'd prefer to give the ball to than, you know, because that's just savvy, isn't it? You give it to the players that are going to create something. So you would, on occasions, not give it, without mentioning any names, give it to an individual that...
Even if they've been clear...
No, that's different. If it's obviously...
Oh, thing. I see.
But you know, if you've got like a choice.
Oh, okay.
You know.
Man, that's...
Yeah. Are you going to give it to Chris Waddle or Doug Ruvey? Why would you know? Of course you do.
Under the illusion he had a tremendous career.
And then there were players like Gazza.
Yeah.
Who would only give it to a player if he knew he had no alternative but to give it straight back to him.
Oh, really?
Because
he hogged
the ball all day.
It shows you the peripheral.
And the other one, the strikers one that we've all done it. I've discussed this with Wrighty and Shearer on many occasions. That one where you've got the ball and there's someone breaking in that you could slip them in, but you just slip it a little bit wide so they've got no choice to cross it to you when you time you're running the box. Every striker's done that.
Have they?
Of course. Goal scorers.
There was a couple of incidents in the Tottenham game I was watching yesterday where, well, the old fashioned word greedy springs to mind. There was a couple of wild shots into the side netting when you thought, and it's when you can see everyone else with their arms as, what you doing?
Yeah.
But that's all forgotten.
The only
thing
is, I often defend strikers in those positions when they shoot from what seems like a shooting when somebody is in, and all these commentators, you know, they haven't really got a clue. They've never played up front in their lives. What you've got to realise is that to score a goal by passing sideways, I don't know whether you watched the Norwich game.
No.
Liverpool-Norwich.
No.
Well, they had one where he's got one-on-one with Alisson. Now, he might have been offside. I think VAR would have pulled it back, but that's irrelevant. And he tried to do a little pass to his mate, and Alisson was brilliant as he is, and he's managed to get a hand to it and stop the pass going to the other fella. And people would have said, well, that was the right thing to do. The right thing to do is score. Yeah. But I always used to argue that if you just go yourself, you either miss or you score. It's one thing that can go wrong.
Yeah.
But if you pass the ball to someone else, it's the pass that could go wrong. And they can make it wrong. So therefore, there's twice the chances of it going wrong. So unless you are an obvious, disadvantaged angle to score, then I would say you go on your own. And most strikers would do that.
I always think one of the most poor form in terms of manners that players can do is when you've laid it on a plate for someone, you put it right across the goal and have to attack it, and they don't run to you first to say thank you. They wheel away, giving their own thing to go.
One thing I did, I always used to go to the player that passed the ball,
because then they might do it again. You see some don't give
because,
it a kiss in the badge.
Because I used to slaughter so many wingers for not giving it early enough. So when they do, you've got to go and do it. It's at half-time. Got no food.
Back, say to me, VAR, don't roll your eyes, but I've got a question that maybe you can help me with. And it's something watching the game.
Don't tell me you're now pro VAR.
But it's a conundrum within it now.
Okay.
So when we
all right, we'll do that. We'll do that after half-time.
Thank you. we have with us a very special guest whose grandfather served in the Second World War and whose journey through Italy has been recently explored in a television documentary on none other than BBC One. It is, of course, Gary Lineker. Welcome, Gary.
Oh, thank you very much. But before we start, can I just do one thing?
Yeah.
Can I just go, Achtung, Achtung?
Yeah.
As a regular...
Well, all right, you know, I quit.
As someone who listens. That's actually what I shouted when I equalised against Germany in 1990.
Did you really?
No. Oh.
I wish you had.
I think it's what they did when they won their penalty shootout. But I mean, not at all. That was a brief extract from my recent guest appearance, actually, on the Second World War History podcast. We have Ways of Making You Talk, which is presented by Al Murray and James Holland. You may have heard it. I was talking about my granddad's war experiences, but also the sportsmen who went to war, and there were a lot of them. The episode is called Fighting Footballers, if you fancy a listen.
That's good.
Danny, V-A-R.
Speaking
you
about
asked me
fighting
to,
footballers.
You asked me to remind you.
We were watching the game yesterday in the Tottenham match, and when they have this thing that happens now when they let play carry on while they were looking yesterday for a possible handball or a penalty, but the game goes on for about 2.5 minutes, and then the referee says it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
If it had have been handball, and if in that ensuing 2.5 minutes there'd have been another handball in the area, is that two penalties?
No.
Why not?
They go back to the original, the first decision. It's the same as if they'd gone up the other end and scored.
So it's phantom football. It doesn't count that bit of football.
Correct.
That's just pathetic, isn't it? Because if
You can't really go have a, if they've given a penalty retrospectively.
Yeah.
And then the teams have already gone up and scored at the other end. They can't really go, well, we'll give you that goal and then you go and take
your
penalty.
And this is something my nephew pointed out. Supposing it was looking at a red card for a handball on the line, and in that 2.5 minutes there's another red card. Is that player not... That doesn't count either.
No, I don't believe... I don't believe so. Unless it's... Maybe if it's violent play. I don't know. Good question.
Ah, at last.
You've beaten me.
Is that phantom bit of the game when it carries on and still waiting for anyone? Yeah. 2.5 minutes. And then they say... Well, if it had been a penalty, yes. Yeah. But in the meantime, the other side have got a blatant penalty.
Yeah.
It just...
No, they go back... They definitely go back to the original one there. On the question of a red card, I don't know, because if there's serious foul or somebody smacks someone in the face, well, I would imagine that would still count as well, because it's not... It wouldn't have affected what...
No,
the game, I suppose. Well, it sort of would, because it would... The play that would have been assumed actually wouldn't have been real. I don't know.
These are exciting times in which we live, aren't they?
Isn't it?
Liverpool season. Okay, this is from Sally Clark. Sally in Huddersfield. And it's a subject that I put out on Twitter, simply called, That Bloke That Sits Behind You. Okay, we're all, to some extent, gendering it. Even Sally
I sat behind John Murray at the... you know the commentator for Radio 5 Live, John Murray, sat behind him, and he had this bobble hat that was... he's tall anyway, but it wasn't a bobble hat that just fitted tightly to his head. It was one of those that went really high. I couldn't see the game. So Chris Sutton was sat next to me, who's got his number, and he texted him. But he didn't see it till half time. And then eventually he looked around and he went... He didn't bloody lower his bobble hat either.
You don't often see the bubble hat.
No, it's like a big, tall, like long thing.
Oh, I know. That's how I get a Dr. Seuss.
My good friend Danny Kelly, who speaks like this.
Dissimilar to the one that you're wearing today.
No, my wig I'm wearing. This is serious. But Danny, with the first time he ever saw himself on television, he was about 8 years old behind the goal at White Hart Lane, and he could identify himself because he was wearing a bubble hat one of his sisters had knitted, on which the pom-pom on top was the size of his head. It was a great big pom-pom really? On top of it, And he said, I can easily see me every time there's a corner. There I am, because huge white pom-pom on his head. Anyway.
Carry on.
This is Sally. She's nice enough to write this. She said, over the moon, you're back. Thank you. My daughter and I have had season tickets at Huddersfield Town for years. We're in our fourth season. My daughter is 11 and have kept the same seats, which unfortunately means we have to endure the same bloke sat behind us for all four seasons too. Now, she uses a word here that over the years I've often substituted for, let's say, the worst swear word of all. I've always put the word tugboat. Because, you know, I know your friends with Joey Petchy, but some of us are sensitive to this. anyway, that's coming up. So it says, the chap in question is an absolute tugboat. And although we're in the so-called family stand, his swearing is supposedly frowned upon. He calls the referee exactly that, loudly, all the time during games. As an example of why I despise this man, when we played Man City in our first glorious season in the Premier League, when we returned home, my husband and I asked how the match went, my then 9-year-old daughter said, "It was really exciting, Daddy, but the referee's a massive tugboat." The little 9-year-old said this. My non-football-loving husband was not impressed. The bloke behind us also has the annoying habit, and this is, I think, is worse, of calling all the players by their first names. So sometimes it feels like we're on watching an under-11s team play. "Nice one, Johnny. Come on, Elias. Come on, Elias, what are you doing?"
Elias.
"Superb, Christopher. Great, Christopher." Now, I've known blokes who did that, and then at Millwall, that kind of accent sticks out. But I remember saying, "Come on, John, look for Mark up front." I remember that bloke doing that.
It sounds like some public school.
I know, I know. You can imagine down the den. It was quite unusual. Yeah. It's worth noting that we were at the very, very top of one of the stands, and therefore the chances of any players actually hearing his personalised brand of encouragement are slim to none, as we're about 200 feet up and sometimes struggle for oxygen up there. He also, and I swear to God, if he shouts, "Liner," at what he perceives to be the wrong decision by the linesman. So help me, I'm going to turn around and give him one of my looks.
It's not really Lino, isn't it?
My daughter has actually called him Liner, he calls out.
Liner.
My daughter has already called him Tugboat under her breath several times. Can't complain, Sally from Huddersfield.
Brilliant.
The bloke that sits behind her.
It's funny if that leads to one from Rob Field, who said, "I was nearly sent off in a Sunday league match for foul language. Would miking up the refs stop pro players swearing?"
No, nor should it. Nor should it.
What's wrong with swearing?
Oh, I know. I mean, seriously.
Just letters put together in a different order to other words.
And exactly.
I've never quite understood why people get worried by a group of letters put together. I get people say to me, "Well, I don't really think you should swear on Twitter and stuff like that." So, well, don't follow me then.
But there is the thing.
Sometimes it adds emphasis.
It is the right word. People say, "Oh, it's a sign of a limited vocabulary." No, it's not. Those are some of the oldest words in the English language, and they've persisted because that's the word you want. That is it. Bloody, not good enough. Sodding, not good enough.
No, sometimes you need a good fuck.
Anyway, Miss Anderson, I'll
anyway,
take you
apologies,
over
apologies to anyone who doesn't like foul language.
No, but it's absolutely... Stephen Fry, nobody's more loquacious.
No,
and Stephen is one of the most superb swearers in the world. In private, and he would tell... And he just looks at people and say, "Why would you deny yourself these words? They're some of the most... That is the most use, as they say.
That's massive emphasis.
It is, absolutely.
I've got one here from Daniel Hendry from Belfast, who asks, "Hi, Gary, have you ever dreamt about a match the night before? Scoring the winning goal or missing a sitter? Maybe. I still dream about scoring winning goals, and I haven't played football in 10 years. He shouldn't have asked me about dreams.
Go on.
So many football dreams during my career, and I still get them to this day.
I'll bet.
And recurring dreams, mainly. Two in particular stand out. One is that I couldn't quite get my kit on in time to get out onto the pitch, and all the players, the whole teams were out there. And I used to get in a panic, and my shin pads, and my boots weren't on. And I used to miss kickoff, and that used to give me so much anxiety. It's a mildly bonkers one. And the other one that I always had, it's weird. I never had dreams about playing well. Ever.
No.
You never scored a hat-trick in the European Cup final. No, I did that for real.
I know you did.
Occasionally.
I know you did.
I'm joking.
I thought you might dream it.
But genuinely, never. My dreams were always like negative. Bizarre.
Oh.
I used to dream regularly this thing where I'd get chance after chance in the same move and 3 yards out, and I'd hit it, and somebody's leg would get in the way, and then I'd miss kick it at the post, it'd come back to me. It was like 100 times, and it's not going in, and everyone's laughing at me and stuff.
Oh my God.
Am I weird?
No, you're not weird. No, I think this is doing
my
you good.
Dreams are weird.
You should lay down on a settee over there, and I'll charge you.
I think what happened then is when you actually go to play the game itself, it's never as bad as the dream. It's just so easy.
The original film of Father of the Bride, not the remake with Steve Martin, the original with Spencer Tracy, and he has one of the classic anxiety dreams. I was telling you before that when I used to do live television regularly, I was on top deck of a bus looking down at a television showroom where the opening titles were starting, and I was on this bus and I had to get there. I think every profession has those. But in Father of the Bride, he has nightmares about his impending daughter's wedding, and he has got to give her away. And in it is so beautifully that I think Vincente Minnelli filmed it. and he's trying to get up the aisle of the church, and his daughter's looking around saying, "Dad, what are you doing?" His trousers are too long for him, yeah. And he's stumbling over them, and the floor, the aisle of the church, has turned somehow to kind of a trampoline-y surface, and he's by hands, and his feet are going into it, and it's rubberized, and then he's on his hands and knees trying to get there, and I know all of every profession has a dream. Yeah.
Dreams are mad, aren't they?
I love them. I really enjoy them.
I don't mind them either, but they're just weird, aren't they? Because
it
just feels so real, don't they?
Gerard, Dream Gerard, is used to a French...
Houllier?
A French artist used to wear his spectacles in bed that he may see his dreams more clearly. Oh, isn't that beautiful?
I think that's Stephen Gerrard, isn't it?
Stephen Gerrard, that'll be absolutely Stephen Gerrard. But as I mentioned, I've got my Oscar-winning nephew from Los Angeles in.
Oscar-winning?
Oscar-winning. I've promoted him during the
play. I was going to say, he didn't mention that at the top.
And he said to me on the train, he said, "Does Gary ever play?" I said, "Quite famous, you told me," and I was stunned. You haven't kicked a competitive ball since you walked off the last match.
No, not a five-a-side, not an 11-a-side, anything, no.
Well, that
there was a reason I retired. I was crap. I couldn't do it anymore, and I didn't want to be rubbish.
That's not true, and you know it. You were crap.
No, it's true. Once you, why do you retire? Why as a footballer? Why do you retire?
Yeah, but you did not do. If you don't have to play at the very top, I mean,
Joey
Pesci came back. He said, "I've got no more to give." Your friend Joey.
But actors can act forever. They just play different roles. They play older people.
Yeah, I guess
that
so.
Are made to look slightly younger.
Well, he said on the way here.
Go on,
Phil,
anyway,
he
go
said.
On.
Does that, if Gary ever wants a good five-a-side game, because you've got to LA a lot. I said he won't. He won't. And he said, "Well, we're not." I said, He won't. But then you said your team. Go on, tell us your team.
This is what it's about, isn't it?
Come on. Walk on, bro. Go on.
So, being in LA, being a Brit, and being in football, we got introduced to some football Brits, lads who like to play and kick around and what have you. And couple of different groups that I play with. One of them plays up at Rod Stewart's house.
I've heard that. I've heard about Rod Stewart's five-a-side teams.
That's a good group, bunch of actors and music people and what have you. And then through that group, I got connected with another group, mostly music, mostly DJs, one of them being Calvin Harris. Calvin Harris runs this little five-a-side, pitch in the middle of LA. So...
Does he mix it a bit, does he?
Yeah. He's,
I said you wouldn't be able to get through it with him.
Yeah,
I told
sorry,
you
sorry, carry yeah. on.
So I get the message off the lad who sort of does the organising. He's like, "Make sure you're there this week." I'm like, "All right, yeah, yeah." So turn up at the pitch, and this little Italian sports car pulls up. This little Italian gets out of it. I'm like, "He looks familiar." Turns out Calvin Harris, the week before, had been whizzing through LA, got into a bit of a bump, and paparazzi had caught up to him, and he was the pictures of him looking all flustered, and this little Italian walks to the end of his drive, sees this commotion, and recognises Calvin, and he's like, come in here. So he brings him in, has a cup of tea. They get chatting, Alessandro Del Piero.
He could play.
So sure enough, the following week, Del Piero turns up and he was brilliant. He was great. He took pictures and he was...
You see, he ain't like you. He thinks he's still got something to offer. He says, you know, not only that, he was a hero.
Lots of players do. Lots of players do. And I totally respect that. Yeah. I totally respect Alessandro Del Piero. But you've got to remember, Alessandro Del Piero was a really skillful footballer. So therefore, you can probably play much older and get away with it. It's like Peter Beardsley, really skillful footballer, it still plays to this day. I wasn't a seriously skillful footballer.
My... You're Gary Lineker.
Yeah, but I couldn't dribble past you now.
Oh,
well, yes, I could.
Sounds like a
yes,
to
could.
Me.
Yes, I could. Except in my dreams that I never get past anyone. But I don't know, each to their own. I mean, there's players that never play again and players
I've never ever met, and I've met quite a lot of professional footballers who've said, "No, turned it off like a tap. Not interested."
Yeah.
I
think I had the 2-year injury thing in Japan where I just wanted to, it was so frustrating. And then I came back to play and a big centre half ran past me and I thought, that's it, curtains, what's the point?
Yeah.
What's the point? Then I'm going to be rubbish.
But imagine this, just if you will, and we should have dreamy music behind this. You were walking here on the common near where you live. Mm. There's a game going on, you know, and it's just a regular game, a Sunday morning game, and the ball is overhit and it rolls off the side of the pitch towards you.
Now, I'd give it them back, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, but wouldn't you suddenly hit it back and think, oh, that was good. That feels good. Welcome back. You know? No.
The thought of putting kit on and boots and all that, it just makes me go, oh, no.
You're talking like you're...
This is a junkie who's not touched heroin
for 8 years. It's a football.
Yeah, well, I can't relate to that. But here's the truth, right? I felt, this is genuine, I'm telling you the truth now, and it sounds a bit weird, but for me, my career, got away with it.
Well, that's an amazing thing to say. And I mean,
I genuinely believe, like, all the goal-scoring thing. I played with players with, like, massive amount of ability and stuff like that. And I know I had an ability to have certain... my main strength was my mental strength and my ability to stay calm at all moments and stuff like that, and my speed.
Yeah.
But actually, like, yeah, I had no tricks. I couldn't, you know, beat players and dribble. I could do it through pace, but not...
Gary, yeah. I mean this from love. Yeah. You need therapy, my friend.
You may
pass for his veil of tears not knowing you're Gary Lineker.
I'm chuffed with my career. It's better than thinking, looking back and going, I should have done so much better with what I had. But I actually think I did...
Yeah, but it just seems to me like, you know, it's like, imagine the outcry if I said I was never going to broadcast again.
It's funny though. Yeah.
No, that's probably not the best illusion I could have come up with. Yeah. But no, I one side of me says, well, you know what, that's an honourable thing.
But the truth is now, looking back over time and I see games that I've played in, I actually look at them and I genuinely think I was a lot better than I thought I was. I was obviously a lot better than I thought I was, but I never really. Yeah, I know it sounds odd because people say,
but it does
you've got to believe in yourself to be.
Oh,
like
I've lucked out into another World Cup. Yeah. Oh, I've got the golden boot. Oh, what a stroke of luck!
Genuinely, that's ridiculous. I know it's ridiculous.
Well, it is. Well,
what a trick! What a trick!
There was someone put on YouTube on Twitter, and they said,
"Oh, it was one of those for Everton against Man City."
Oh, sorry.
Man City fan over there.
Man City fan,
Yeah, that was in my season at Everton, yeah. That was a nice little hat-trick. That was quite good.
All three, wasn't it? It was a...
Two terrible defending mistakes. Yeah, but you've got to capitalise on these things.
That is the thing. Yeah. So, another question or do you want another email?
Go email. Okay. Because I need to have a hunt.
Okay, here we go. Now, I've got players who saved my life. That bloke who sits behind you. A footballer wanted to kill me. Playing under the influence of drink. Let's have one of our old and drugs. There are about 100 subjects open for Behind Closed Doors, if you've not heard the show before. And I will retweet them. And they're all open. They're all valid. And it's not your fault you came to late. So never think, that subject's gone. This was a long time ago. We were doing Playing Under the Influence of Drink.
These are generally quite
good. I like these. But this is one I can identify with because I've been in this sort of situation. I'm an avid listener. Thank you. From Perth in Australia. Thank you, my friend. But I spent my first 30 years in Blighty. You mentioned on a previous podcast about players playing under the influence, and it made me recall one of the most bizarre games I have had the joy to play in. I was at the time playing for the Mailman's Arms, a Sunday league team in Lyndhurst, Hampshire. We had a final game of the season against Fountain Court, a local pub team, our rivals. We needed to win this in order to win the league. They were purely at this stage mid-table. They had nothing to play for. Obviously, it was a huge game for us, and we were prepared. We turned up early, set the pitch up, and started warming up in the most professional manner possible. And we waited for the opposition and carried on warming up. And we did some runabouts and we did some kickabouts. However, as yet, no opposition. They hadn't arrived. While waiting to see if we even had a game, a car turned up and two lads got out. "Are you Fountain Court?" we asked, the two of them. "Boys," they said, "listen, if you don't get double figures today, there's something wrong with you." "We don't understand. Where's the team?" "Oh, look, we wondered if it was a double bluff, to be honest. All our players been out on a 30th birthday party all night. Half of them ain't slept. The rest are in fancy dress. The minibus is on its way, though." Sure enough, not knowing whether to believe such a story, we waited, and the minibus did arrive. And there they were. A case of beer still in the bus, some still swilling away, and out of a sliding door came a bank robber, a gorilla, a huge banana, and even someone in what was frankly be called S&M gear. It was at this point the referee flatly refused to play the fixture. We, though, seeing this as the easiest route to a league title, pleaded with him actually to start the game. Should there be any misdoing whatsoever, they could have called it back and we don't get the title. Yeah. Needless to say, the game was a shambles, an absolute shambles. There were cries from their keeper at corners of, I can't see anything. Later on, followed by, no, I'm seeing twice of everything. I'm seeing double. He flapped aimlessly around and actually fell over quite a lot. After 20 minutes, when the booze was wearing off, the mood quickly changed and tackles got dirtier and later and even dirtier yet. Thankfully, though, the game reached its entirety. We scored 12. Although they scored 2. The well, league, however, was ours. That's a great story.
That is a really good story. Which brings me, actually, to Simon Greenaway's question. He sent in, what's the worst hangover you've had when playing or working? Well, I didn't really have one when I was playing, but I'll tell you the story about I did the World Cup final draw in Moscow, in the Kremlin.
Yes, of course.
In the back of the Kremlin.
Yes, of course.
And there was 3 days of rehearsals.
Really?
Yeah, because it was really complicated.
Oh, no, they're very complicated.
No, it's
they
like
are,
this
yeah.
team from this continent can't play from
course,
this and it this. And I had to be trained in the computer thing and the whole thing. And it was really difficult. But we went through different scenarios and this. And eventually we did the show and we had Diego there and all this this. And that's, I told the story about when he came to me afterwards. But this is separate. This was a Friday night, and I had Match of the Day on next Saturday. I had a flight to get at, I think it was like 7 in the morning, to go to Heathrow, then wait, and then fly up to Manchester where we record Match of the Day. So I thought, no problem at all. Anyway, the draw went really well. It wasn't the most complicated one we could have had, and it all went very smoothly. I was chuffed. And we went after, and all the players, and we went back to the hotel.
Yeah,
and,
why not?
And we started having a few
of
drinks.
Of course, why not?
And then we had this... kind of person that was helping us out, FIFA. She was Russian, and she was great, organising the trip for us. And after the game, she said, right, we started having a few drinks. She said, you've got to learn to drink Russian shots. So we started drinking from Russians, like vodka shots. So it ended up quite competitive with footballers, one of them being the Brazilian Ronaldo. Now, the Brazilian Ronaldo can put it away.
Can he?
And for the first time in my life, part of my life disappeared. It had never happened. I've heard this thing, and my son's laughing next door because it happens to him a lot, way too much. So from a point where I remember being all together in this mass and then having this kind of rant at Gianni Infantino about you've got to do things right, FIFA and all this, the next thing I can remember is being in the loo and thinking, I'm in trouble here. The next thing, I had to meet my agent downstairs. I think we had to meet at something like 4 in the morning. And for some reason, I just suddenly woke up and I thought, what's the time? And it was bang on 4 o'clock in the morning. And I'm thinking, how did I get here? I don't know anything. Yeah. And I am absolutely, I get up and I'm wobbling all over the place. And I remember going downstairs and I remember saying to John, I said, just get me on the plane. Just get me on the plane. And I was falling asleep in the airport and I stumbled. Then I got on the plane. Then I got to Heathrow and my head's I'm in a mess. And I'm thinking, I've got to do Match of the Day tonight. And then they announced there's a 3-hour delay and I'm sat there in the thing. And I eventually got up late to Salford, but managed somehow to do the show. But the moral of this story is never, ever do shots with the Brazilian Ronaldo.
Wow, what a tale. I wish I had that Match of the Day particularly. And I'm sure it didn't show.
No,
I'm sure it didn't show. Yeah. I mean, whether we're not now already running over, I've got one or two tales of that myself. I do think I once... I'd say the presenter involved because he's still alive and is venerable. But I thought I detected, he's an ITV football host, and I thought I detected once him being a little slurry during it, and he looked like he didn't expect who he was talking to. It was during a World Cup. Didn't expect who he was talking to stop talking at that point. He was just hoping, just keep talking because I'm not really listening. And they did. And there was a second delay. And then he asked the worst question in the world of his panel. You could see him thinking, it's gone quiet, it's me.
Yeah.
And he went, so lads, what do we think about styles of play at this World Cup? And I thought, what? And they all looked at him and thought, what? And you could see in his eyes,
I
think he was drunk when he did that. I tell you what, because he's still alive and he could sue or he'd just be embarrassed. But he asked, What do you think of styles of play at this World Cup? You were a heartbeat away from that, Lineker. A heartbeat away from saying such an empty question.
I know, I probably did. You. It's amazing, though, when you're doing live TV and the red light goes on, how it, you know, you suddenly snaps you in. Adrenaline just gets rid of all.
Except, I find, sorry, everyone, but in reading, if I've written something down, I think it's particularly worth, you know, I'm only any good. I've never had an earpiece. I'm only any good ad-libbing. But sometimes I'll write something down, I look down at it, and it's doing a Watusi. All the words are just, I can't read. And I'll go, and so what it was, and just like swearing, it comes out another way. That's another conversation for another time.
Well, we're out of time. We're done. First one back. It's great to be back.
Like we never left.
Enjoy your football, whether you're watching or playing this week or doing it with a hangover or whatever. Any questions for Danny and I, send them via Twitter using the hashtag behind closed doors. We're always thrilled to get them and we'll try and answer as many as we can.
Yes, and your emails, of course, are of a tremendous standard and nothing gets wasted. One of these weeks when we're both sitting here sloshed, let's just read out what the people have sent us and you'll know that show. Anyway, you two LA birds are there, so you're meeting up with Madonna and that later on.
I think I'm done. Bye.